Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, A History of Economic Thought by William J. Barber's a scholarly overview of the evolution of economic ideas from classical political economy through Marxian, neoclassical, and Keynesian traditions, written as an accessible but more technical alternative to shorter popular histories. It examines major economists in relation to the historical problems they confronted and the later relevance of their ideas. The book covers Adam Smith, Thomas Robert Malthus, David Ricardo, John Stuart Mill, Karl Marx, Alfred Marshall, and John Maynard Keynes, using them to show how economic theory developed in response to changing social and institutional conditions. Rather than treating the history of economics as a sequence of isolated doctrines, Barber emphasizes the continuity of recurring issues such as value, distribution, growth, and instability. The result is a concise but serious introduction to the discipline's intellectual foundations, especially suitable for readers who want both historical context and analytical depth. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, classical economics as a debate over value, growth, and distribution. Barber begins with classical economics because it established many of the basic questions that later schools had to reinterpret. Adam Smith, Malthus, Ricardo, and Mill are presented not as names in a timeline, but as thinkers engaged in a common problem, how a market society generates wealth and how that wealth is divided. The book pays close attention to issues such as the theory of value, rent, wages, profits, and accumulation, since these were central to classical analysis. This matters because classical economics was not simply about free markets in a modern sense. It was also a framework for understanding long-run development and conflict among social classes. Barber shows how disagreements inside the classical tradition, especially between Ricardo and Mill, reveal the instability of any single economic formula when applied to real social change. By doing this, he makes classical economics useful as a foundation for later debates rather than a closed historical stage. Secondly, Marxian economics as a critique of capitalist production and its contradictions. The Marxian section centers on Karl Marx's analysis of capitalism as a system with internal tensions rather than a stable equilibrium order. Barber treats Das Kapital as an intervention into the same core problems that occupied classical economists, especially value, labor, exploitation, accumulation, and crisis. What distinguishes Marx in Barber's account is not simply opposition to capitalism, but the effort to explain how capitalist production generates both growth and instability. That perspective gives the book analytical range. Marx is not included as an ideological counterpoint alone, but as a theorist who reworked classical categories into a critique of social relations and power. Barber's handling of Marx helps show why Marxian economics remained influential even beyond the political movements associated with it. The chapter framing suggests that Marx's importance lies in exposing contradictions that later economists could not fully ignore, especially questions about uneven development, income distribution, and economic crisis. This makes the Marxian tradition part of the broader history of economic reasoning rather than a separate intellectual cul-de-sac. Thirdly, neoclassical economics and the formalization of market analysis. Barber's discussion of Alfred Marshall marks the shift from classical political economy to neoclassical economics, where formal analysis of individual choice and market adjustment becomes more prominent. Marshall is important in the book because he helps systematize economics into a more rigorous discipline without entirely abandoning earlier concerns about social welfare. Barber shows that neoclassical economics did not emerge in a vacuum. It developed as economists tried to refine concepts such as supply, demand, price, and marginal adjustment in response to older debates about value. The book's treatment of pre-1914 variations on neoclassical themes indicates that this school was never a single fixed doctrine, but a family of approaches shaped by attempts to extend and correct Marshall's framework. A key value of this section is that it explains why neoclassical economics became so influential in modern economics. It offered a more precise language for modeling markets, even when that precision came at the cost of narrowing some historical and institutional concerns. Barber presents this development as a major methodological change, not merely a change in terminology. Fourthly, Keynesian economics and the problem of macroeconomic instability. The Keynesian section focuses on John Maynard Keynes as the economist who most clearly challenged the assumption that markets automatically produce full employment and stable. Barber treats the general theory as a turning point because it reoriented economic analysis toward aggregate demand, unemployment, and the conditions under which economies can remain stuck in underperformance. This is one of the book's most important insights. Keynes is not presented merely as a policy advocate, but as a theorist who redefined the level at which economic problems should be analyzed. Instead of concentrating only on prices and individual markets, Keynesian economics asks how total spending, expectations, and financial confidence shape the entire economy. Barber's postscript structure helps place Keynes in relation to earlier traditions, showing both continuity and rupture. Keynes inherits concerns about instability from earlier economists, yet he develops a distinctly modern framework for understanding recession and policy response. This makes the Keynesian chapter especially relevant to readers interested in why 20th century economics moved toward macroeconomic management and stabilization policy. Lastly, why Barber treats the history of economic thought as practically useful. One of the book's defining claims is that the history of economic thought is not just an antiquarian survey, but a practical tool for understanding present economic problems. Barber repeatedly emphasizes that the major economists studied here remain relevant because the issues they addressed have not disappeared. Growth, inequality, crisis, and policy failure continue to recur in new forms. This perspective gives the book a distinctive purpose compared with more narrative or celebratory histories of economics. Rather than asking readers to admire great thinkers from a distance, Barber encourages them to compare theoretical systems, notice their assumptions, and learn from their mistakes. That approach makes the book especially useful for students, because it links intellectual history with analytical discipline. It also explains why the book can feel more technical than popular alternatives. Barber wants readers to see how concepts such as value and distribution actually operate inside different schools of thought. The practical benefit is interpretive clarity. Readers come away better prepared to understand why economists disagree, how theories evolve, and why earlier debates still shape contemporary policy discussions. In conclusion, A History of Economic Thought is best suited to undergraduate and general readers who want a serious introduction to economics through its major intellectual traditions. It is especially valuable for students of economics, political theory, and intellectual history because it explains how classical, Marxian, neoclassical, and Keynesian ideas developed in response to concrete historical problems. Readers interested in the origins of modern debates about value, inequality, growth, unemployment, and stabilization policy will find it especially useful. What distinguishes the book from many similar surveys is its balance of accessibility and analytical depth. It is more technical than a popular narrative like Heilbronner's Worldly Philosophers, but it is still organized clearly enough to serve as a guide to the field. Barber does not treat the history of economics as a museum of obsolete theories. Instead, he shows how each school retains insight into recurring economic difficulties. That makes the book intellectually practical. It helps readers understand not only what economists have thought, but why those ideas mattered then and why they still matter now. If you would like to support William J. Barber, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.